Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 62, Take 2, because we did the best podcast we've ever done on Monday, and unfortunately, because of a technical glitch, we don't have it. So we're going to try and recreate the magic, Dave, and we got a little extra stuff to talk about with the Mike Tomlin press conference, so let's get to it. Steelers get a win on Sunday against the Browns, and even though it was a quote-unquote meaningless game because it didn't impact the Steelers' number three spot in the standings, it was a meaningful game for a bunch of guys who played in that game.
Yeah, and my apologies, first of all, to the listeners and to you. In fact, I want to make sure I got that quote right. You had said that that was the best podcast of 2017. So,
yeah, well, I don't want to narrow it down, but yes, that's what I said. I really want to turn the guilt screws as hard as I can.
I realize that, and with good reason, too. Boy, just when you think that you got this recording thing figured out after doing this for, you know, seven seasons now, just as soon as you don't check or recheck something happens. And you know, we've had some issues with your audio level, and I've been trying to straighten all that out. And after this season's over, I'm going to look into different avenues to record this thing. So I apologize for taking that podcast as a meaningless one. It came back to haunt me for sure. And as far as the Steelers going that game against the Browns, I think we kind of opened up talking in the first take of this episode about, you know, if we agreed with the decision by Mike Tomlin to play, you know, several of these starters as long as he did. And you know, look, I don't really think I had an issue with those guys playing a quarter or a half, but I admit I was quite surprised to see some of those guys, Timmons and Shazier and a few guys on that offensive line, you know, play as long as they did. I didn't mind so much to see Artie Burns and Sean Davis and some of those younger guys out there, but a few of those guys I think could have played, you know, a few less snaps.
Yeah, I pressed you on it, and just very simply, did Mike Tomlin make the right decision? And I think we both agree he did not. Now, it doesn't look like there's going to be consequences to that, because those guys specifically came out relatively healthy. And look, I understand. Yeah, we talked about it beforehand. It's not preseason game number three with 90 guys on the sideline. There were injuries, so there are factors about it. And it was the first question I asked Mike Tomlin at the press conference today. What was his rationale behind doing it? And he said, you know, I said, I understand the balance between you want to keep guys healthy. The priority is the playoffs. But, you know, once you guys have a hat, you know, you're going to play to win. And he did. And he, you know, he went through various, you know, comments about guys injured and having replacements and special teams and fatigue. That's all a bunch of BS at the end of the day, in my mind, because, look, a guy playing 20 special team snaps doesn't mean he can't play 40 regular, you know, regular snaps in the second half, you know, Matakevich, Vince Williams, whoever it may be. So we both disagreed with it, but the Steelers got to win. There's a little bit of value to that, I guess, and they're relatively healthy.
Yes, and in fact, Mike Tomlin went over the injury report during the Tuesday press conference, as usual, and he said that guys dealing with pre-existing injuries all have a chance to play against the Dolphins. That list of players includes Stephon Tuitt with a knee, tight end Xavier Grimble with ribs, wide receiver Sammy Coates hamstring, linebacker Anthony Ciccolo ankle, and safety Robert Golden with an ankle. I believe all but Grimble sat out the game this past weekend against the Cleveland Browns. He said all these guys are in a better position than they were a week ago, and we're excited about maybe having all these guys guys available to us. We won't change our formula, yada, yada, yada. Readiness during the juncture of the over the course of the week. Let participation be the guide with those players. As far as tight end Ladarius Green goes, I believe there were reports last week that Green was maybe out of concussion protocol. Mike Tomlin said Tuesday he is still in protocol but making good progress. He went on to say, although that I will acknowledge that it is progressing rather well. The quality of his participation and the effects of his is probably going to be one of the last one or two items that he's going to have to check off. From that perspective, we won't shortcut the protocol. We never do. We'll rely on our medical experts in that area, as we always do. A few other guys that were dinged up.
Let me just comment on the Ladarius Green thing. Is the PR staff does not make players available to the media when they're in concussion protocol, and that's why Green was made available to the media Friday. He did not appear in the locker room, so he didn't speak to the media, but he was made available. So the other thing is. So that's why there was some speculation in the media that he was out of concussion protocol. The second point is they won't have cleared Ladarius Green. There won't be a process to clear Ladarius Green from today, from Friday until possibly Thursday. I mean, I don't know how much physical exertion he's gone through over the past couple of days, but, you know, very, very obviously he didn't play on Sunday. They didn't work out Saturday. Looking at film mostly on Monday, and Tuesday's an off day. So he hasn't gone through the physical exertion, which is the last step of concussion protocol, to go through that final thing to be ready. I'll be shocked if Ladarius Green doesn't play on Sunday. Let me just put it that way.
You'll be shocked if he doesn't play.
Yes.
Correct. I'm with you on that. Don't know how much he did. Two limited practices last week, did not practice on Friday. So keep your fingers crossed. This is a guy now that's he missed after getting injured in the game against the Bengals. He sat out the game against the Ravens, and then of course sat out the regular season finale against the Browns. If he doesn't clear this week, he might not clear the rest of the, assuming the Steelers move on, he might not clear the rest of the season. So,
why do you say that?
With the past concussion issues, and you go back to all those reports earlier in the season about the headaches and that kind, just more of his history, more than anything.
I'll bet a lot of money he plays. So.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I would bet money that he plays too.
And it certainly sounds like Stephon Tuitt, from what he said in the law. He said, I'm sure his knee is not fine, but he told everybody in the media yesterday his knee's fine and he's going to play. So he's going to play. I mean, you look at it, you say, who's not going to play in this game? Robert Golden's probably not going to play with his ankle injury, but everybody else I think is a candidate to play. I saw Justin Gilbert in the cafeteria today. He didn't have his shoulder in a sling or anything like that. So. We'll see what the injury report brings tomorrow, but, Ricardo Matthews with his ankle might be a guy, but, Dave, we speculated on what the inactive list is going to look like on Sunday. And we'll get into kind of our receiver conversation in a little bit, but, it should be, the Steelers are going to be dressing. They're going to be having healthy inactives, which, hadn't been the case for some of the season. And that's going to be the case this week. I don't expect too many injured inactives, guys who are unable to go. But before we get too much into Tomlin and what looking forward, I want to stay on Sunday's game, and I want to ask you, one of the things that we talked about last week going into the game was Landry Jones. And we, over 7 years, we've asked a lot of questions and had people, tweet us their thoughts or email us their answers. And I think we got more response to the question that we threw out there. Would you like to have Landry Jones back for 2 years and $5 million, $2.5 million a year as your backup quarterback? And, I thought it was relatively even. You said maybe you thought it was a little bit leaning toward the fans not wanting Landry back. But we got a ton of responses. And Dave, let's start with what kind of performance did you think Landry Jones put out there on Sunday? What letter grade would you give him?
Yeah, and this is kind of my memory's good when it comes to Steelers games. Not so good sometimes when what I say during podcast one day removed. But I remember specifically telling you I would say B minus 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 or C plus 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 whatever way you want to kind of frame that. Now, since our conversation, I've had the luxury of going back through the tape again, and specifically the all 22, and I would maybe bump that up from I would go firm B minus. I think. Look, he only had 13 incompletions during the game. There were 2 to 3 drops. Depending on what you want to call and maybe even 4, depending on what you want to consider the throw to DeMarcus Ayers along the sideline that was originally ruled Ayers in bounds and then later overturned that he didn't get 2 feet in bounds. I thought that was a great throw, and I think that's I think Tony Totap gets that down with no problem whatsoever. So if you want to consider that a drop or a mistake by the wide receiver, I believe Ayers dropped another ball over the middle during the game. I think Jesse James, even though it was a nice play by a Browns defensive player in the end zone, I think Jesse James has to come up with that pass in the end zone, hit him right in hands. James looked like he had both hands on it. Additionally, the little screen pass with D'Angelo Williams working over the middle, I'm not so sure D'Angelo Williams couldn't have done a better. It was a little bit out front of D'Angelo Williams, and I was waiting to see that on the all 22. Could it have been a better throw by Landry Jones? Yes. Could D'Angelo Williams done a better job maybe to at least dive and catch that ball, perhaps on top of it? The interception was awful. Landry Jones will tell you that throw was a poor decision, poor throw. I believe he did so after the game as well. A lot of Landry Jones' incomplete passes were deep throws. I'm talking about throws 20 yards or more down the field. The deep one, a few of them were underthrown. He was, Lord knows what happened on one of them where he threw it to nobody deep down the left side. Was that a missed assignment between Jones and Ayers? Lord knows what happened there. And come to find out, half or I think, what was it, seven balls that he threw seven of his incompletions, I think, went to Ayers, is what I'm trying to say. So don't know how much to read into that there. I think you really have to look at that final drive that the Steelers had and factor that into the grade, especially the money throw to Kobe Hamilton, which, by the way, almost looks like the identical play that the Steelers ran against the Dolphins when Kobe Hamilton caught his first touchdown from Ben Roethlisberger. He had some short crosses underneath. He had the tight end running up the middle to kind of clear things out. Almost looks identical. But I will go from that B minus 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 or C plus 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 to a firm B minus. How's that?
Yeah, and as I said yesterday, look, I give him a B. I give him a better grade than you. I thought Landry Jones was good. He underthrew DHB down the left sideline early in the game, where DHB made a really good play to be the defensive back and break the ball up. The interception was a bad throw. He had two receivers in the area, and a good interception by the Browns DB, but it was a bad throw. But Landry didn't make many bad throws, and there are not a lot of games we come out and say Ben didn't make any bad throws. So he didn't make it. Any more bad throws than we've seen Ben in an average game. You look at his passer rating, he got a passer rating over 100, if that's something that you like to look at. QBR, I think, is a more reflective stat these days, a more all-encompassing stat that does a better job, and he had a 58.4. And just to put that in perspective versus Ben's season, Ben played 14 games on the year. 9 times he was better than 58.4, and 5 times he was worse. And the number that's as close to 58.4 is when Ben played the Browns. In that 24-9 win earlier in the season, Ben had a rating of about 55, and that it was an uninteresting game by Ben. He only threw for, I think, 167 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, just kind of a workmanlike performance in a relatively routine Steeler victory, but one that still was a one score game late when they got the defensive touchdown when the Steelers fell on the ball after Hargrave fell on the ball in the end zone after the sack. So you know, I think Landry did a good job. And so then the question, Dave, we went on and we talked about this. I said I think it's 50-50 whether Landry's back. And you put the number at 10%, but we were looking at it different ways. I put it 50-50 as in, will the Steelers give him that contract and will he take it? And in your mind, without, you know, putting words in your mouth, you basically feel like somebody out there will offer Landry Jones a better contract than $2.5 million for 2 years.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And more than anything, too, maybe a potential chance at having, you know, having a better shot to compete, you know, for a job. I mean, even if the money's equal, Landry Jones would probably be wise to go somewhere else because, I mean, how many years would the Steelers sign him for? Three?
I think three's tops.
You know, and then how many more years do we expect Ben Roethlisberger to play? So,
I put it at five coming into the year, and so I'm not going to move. I don't think it's going to be less than five. I don't think it's going to be less than four now.
And I just think if you look around the league, and how did I phrase the question? I mean, how many backup? Do you remember what I said? How many backup quarterbacks in the league?
Yeah. You know, how many backups would you take over Landry Jones? Are there 10?
Yeah, are there 10? And I haven't gone through the list, but I mean, would you rather have what'd you throw?
I think
out
what
there?
You said was you said we were talking about going into the playoffs here. You got would the Raiders have Landry Jones or rather have Landry Jones or Matt McGloin or Connor Cook? Would the Dolphins rather have Landry Jones or Matt Moore? And I laughed at your line yesterday. You said, and it was funny, is Matt Moore a veteran Landry Jones?
Yeah,
it's not an unreasonable analogy.
Yeah, and is Landry what did I say? is he a young Matt Moore or something?
Yeah, no, is Matt Moore a veteran Landry Jones?
There we go. That's I think that's how I put it. But look, I think I said yesterday too that I was one of the many a few years ago that really didn't want Landry Jones kept on the 53-man roster. I believe you were in that camp too, thinking maybe, you know,
absolutely. We both felt like there were roster spots that were needed and Landry Jones could get to the practice squad and it wouldn't be a big deal.
Right. And, you know, I think you go back to, you know, since then, he played a lot of snaps two preseasons ago and took a step forward, a tiny one at that. And then, of course, played again this preseason. We obviously saw him play in real time in meaningful games last year. We saw him play earlier this year against the Patriots. Not great, by any stretch of the imagination. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl alternate based on what he did against the Browns on Sunday. I guess this, David, and maybe you feel the same way. I find myself defending Landry Jones a little more than I thought I would at this point. With that said, people say, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you. I think that's spot on. Look, Landry Jones stood in there. He converted two fourth downs, one of them with the game on the line. He had a game-winning touchdown drive in that game when the Steelers were behind in overtime. I think there's a lot to be said for what Landry Jones did. And going back to our readers' kind of comments, I mean, the vitriol with which those who don't want Landry Jones back, the vitriol with which they dislike him just amazes me. Because first of all, Landry, look, he played average against New England. The first interception in the first drive hurt the Steelers a bit. Landry Jones didn't lose the game to the Patriots. He's not the reason the Steelers lost. He helped win the game against Arizona last year. Against Kansas City, he got the start, and the Steelers lost in that game. He didn't play all that well. He threw three touchdown passes in this game. He knows the system. And, you know, you look at where the Steelers are, you know, maybe they'll have a Bruce Gradkowski type of situation where you say, let's see what happens in the draft for us. And if we don't take a quarterback, you know, maybe we'd like to have you back. Because, look, they've got Zach Mettenberger. He is under contract. They are going to bring Zach Mettenberger back to camp. And he's a guy who started 10 games. Now, he's 0-10. And, you know, as you pointed out yesterday, Dave, the timeline was filled on Sunday with people who wanted to see Zach Mettenberger play. Well, let me tell you one thing. And I'm not at every practice. But the guys who are there, and this is not part – these aren't guys who were members of the Steeler organization. But these are guys who see the Steelers practice on a, you know, 3-4 times a week basis. Zach Mettenberger's got a big arm, but he doesn't look great in practice. he has not moved ahead of Landry Jones in the depth chart, and there's no reason to believe that over the offseason, if they were both back, that he would move ahead of Landry Jones. He's a guy. He's a veteran guy. He is protection. He's a big insurance policy, like D'Angelo Williams. He's an insurance policy. Justin Gilbert, the Steelers got in the offseason, maybe a better example. They acquired him. He's an insurance policy to see if those young corners didn't develop or play well. They at least had somebody on the roster who had pedigree, hadn't done anything, but had pedigree. And, that's what Mettenberger is, a little bit of that. He started 10 NFL games, but he was a sixth-round draft pick. He was picked later than Landry Jones was in the draft. So, if the Steelers can get the right deal done, and I've thrown the numbers out there and the term out there, I'd like to see him back.
Do you want him back?
Yes. At anything around those numbers, 3 years, $9 million, 2 years, $5 million, something like that, I would bring him back, yeah. And then, I don't know, maybe if they get that done, Dave, maybe they can wait another year to not draft a quarterback.
Yeah, definitely if people are probably turning off the podcast right now. You saying that you want Landry?
Half the people.
Over half the people.
Right.
And for anybody that stumbled upon this podcast that follows on Twitter, probably most of those just shut it off. Look, if you re-sign, and here's the thing, you're going to have to make that decision before the draft with Landry Jones.
If you believe he's going to have suitors, you probably are.
Okay, so we'll know before the draft whether or not they're going to look at a quarterback, because if they re-sign a quarterback, and I think they would have enough trust in Mettenberger to be a number three. And then, they could then wait, another year or whatever.
Does that make it more enticing to sign him, meaning that you don't have to go rounds three through, and you got Mettenberger, which you didn't know you were going to have him when you were drafting in May. So does that make it more enticing? Is that another chip in his corner that you can use a draft pick in round three through five? That's not quarterback. You get to use it elsewhere if you sign Landry Jones. So you get some added value. Not only do you get Landry Jones, you get to not draft a quarterback.
Right. And even if you do draft a quarterback round four, people think Dak Prescott grows on trees, what if you're going to draft a quarterback that you think is going to be a successor to Ben Roethlisberger, odds are you're probably going to have to get him in the first few rounds, right?
Yeah, you're not good. I think if it frees up, I'll even endorse it even more if it frees you up to go, I think we both think they're going to go running back in the first three rounds. But if it means you get to draft an extra defensive lineman in round four or something, give me Landry Jones.
And if you did draft a quarterback and Mettenberger was your number two, of course, none of us really. I haven't seen Mettenberger, in practice since he joined the Steelers. All I have to go off of is his tape at Tennessee there. Where's your confidence level? God forbid something should happen to Ben in 2017 that Zach Mettenberger can do a better job than, say, Landry Jones, obviously.
Well, that's what I said. He's not going to pass him in the depth chart.
And would a rookie be able to, would a rookie draft pick be able to pass Mettenberger in year one, So it's more of the devil, which a lot of people don't like that devil. I think you put it best. I don't think if all possible, I would rather not see them use a mid-round draft pick on a quarterback. However, if they lose Landry Jones to free agency, the way I think they might possibly do, they probably should think about drafting a quarterback in round four or five.
I think it's a guarantee. I don't think there's not even a question mark. They will draft a quarterback if Landry Jones signs elsewhere.
Right. Now, the only question becomes is what round? But
sure. I think it becomes part of the conversation, I think, starting in round three. I don't think you go first two rounds, but any point after that, open season.
And I guess it's only fair that I answer the question that I asked you about, do I want Landry Jones back? Well, the easy out is really just, kind of what you said. It all kind of depends on the money. You know, it really
does. You said yesterday that you thought 10% chance he would be back. You're going to stick with that number?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that surprises me that you're that low on that. Okay, a couple other things.
Just because this team just, you know, in the past hasn't spent a lot of money on backup quarterbacks, you know, and think they're going to have to, you know, Le'Veon Bell, Stephon Tuitt, Antonio Brown, it's going to start eating into all this cap room real quick. That stuff's going to quickly start, and then, you know, God knows what
else.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just a fifth year option that they have to pick up.
Right, but I mean, they may. To get a long-term deal done with him?
I doubt Shazier gets done. That'll happen, in my opinion, that won't happen until the following offseason would be my best.
But, as I've said many times, the Brinks truck is just going to be parked at the Southside facility this offseason.
Right, right. And who knows? They might even, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Bell after he gets the tag. Will he have to ride on that all year, a la the transition tag that Jason Worlds had, you know, a couple years ago? I don't think anybody knows how that's going to play out just yet. And then, like I said, and Antonio Brown, sure, you know, if you sign Landry Jones to a 3-year deal, let's say $3.5-4 million, the first year cap hit on that wouldn't be terribly bad. But when you stack up what his second year cap hit would be, along with guys like Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Stephon Tuitt, all these other guys, that stuff just starts adding up. And I'm just basing my 10% on A, what I think Landry Jones' market value might potentially be. And, you know, B, the history of the franchise, and C, kind of, you know, the situation that the Steelers, you know, are going to be up, you know, be in regards to the cap.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. He's going to be an interesting one. So, Dave, a couple things more out of the game. One is, I was a little surprised that D'Angelo Williams got as much work as he did. And I want to make very clear, kudos to Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert for their roster management here. And we did talk about this yesterday, and then we got an email after last night about somebody wanting us to discuss this topic. Look, they had decisions to make 2 months ago when both D. Will and DHB got hurt. And remember how short they were at the wide receiver position. And it would not have surprised me if either guy went on IR, and they didn't. And the Steelers carried those guys for 6 or 7 weeks, and they won games the entire time, meaningful games. You know, playing with two guys that you knew weren't going to be available for an extended period of time. And they were, again, kind of insurance policies going into the playoffs. And now, you know, we saw what DHB has done on special teams all season long. And then the play he made in the game on Sunday, tracking down that interception from the other side of the field, saying he ran about 80 yards to make the play. Ben said he addressed the team afterward, and that's one specific play he pointed out. You know, you want to talk about character and football, you know, savvy and wanting to play and doing things 100% all the time. That, you know, that's the kind of play you point to. And that's like that Penn State receiver who made the team a few years back because he, in the last preseason game, he tracked down an Eagles player, you know, 80 yards and knocked the ball out at the goal line. Well, DHB, both those guys, D. Will and DHB, DHB is going to be a factor in the playoffs. And we both agree he's getting a helmet. D'Angelo Williams is going to be an insurance blanket. He's not going to touch the ball more than five times. It's going to be the Le'Veon Bell show. But kudos on the roster side, on the management side, to keep those guys in the fold and wait for them to come back because of what they bring to the team. But having said that, I was just surprised that D'Angelo got, 26, 27 touches, and Fitz really only cared, you know, only rushed the ball three times.
Right, and Fitz did have a couple of nice pass receptions kind of later on in that game, showed some nice cut ability as well, too. And you go back through the tape, did Toussaint have some pass protection issues on one of those sacks? Yes. On another sack, I picked that out of the tape last night. He eats up some grass and takes a defensive back coming off the edge to the ground. That was the sack that Landry Jones ended up tripping over the feet of Marcus Gilbert on that one. There were some protections issues up the middle. B.J. Finney, Mike Tomlin said he thought B.J. Finney played above the line against the Browns. I think he's pushing that a little bit. I didn't think that B.J. Finney played overly well at center in what was really his first career start at center. If people remember, his other two starts this season came at left guard. He played real, real well there. So it was nice to get him snaps at the center position, but I don't think he handled handled some of the protections very well and allowed people to get right on top of Landry Jones as a result of it. But yeah, I thought, D'Angelo Williams had to knock that rust off, right? Because it had been since week nine since he had really taken a snap. In the game against the Ravens earlier in the season, he played one snap, and then the game against the Ravens a few weeks ago, he played one snap, and that was a kneel down. So his last real action up until the game against the Browns wasn't until the game against the Patriots many, many moons ago. So I guess we could debate if he played too many snaps or not. He made some. He didn't do much in that game as far as rushing the football, but he had two nice runs out of the Steelers' own end zone where he had to break the play into the goal line.
Yeah, great point. Those were, those are going to go down as no gains, but they could have easily gone as tackle for loss and safety, which he did a good job. And so, we asked the same question, Dave. Running back is going to be a priority in the draft. And if you say, well, Le'Veon Bell's your number one guy, can you live with Toussaint and somebody you're going to draft? I think they'll go high with running back. I don't know that they'll go second round, but I'll be surprised if they don't take a running back in the first three rounds. So is there room for D'Angelo Williams on the roster at the $2 million he's making next year? And would he want to come back if he knows Le'Veon Bell's the main guy and he knows there's going to be another guy that they're going to be working in?
Well, if they win it all this year, do you think
right off into the sunset?
Yeah. I mean, would you, I would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he's 32. He hates more than anything being, told how old he is. So I don't know mentally that he's tired. He's one of those guys, he has said many times, and Mark Caboli laughs about this, say, some guys talk about playing until they're 36 or whatever. He's like, not a chance. So if it's not this year, it's next year. But would you bring him back? It's one of those things where if you're going to draft a rookie high, is there room for him?
Once again, you would have to probably make the decision with D'Angelo Williams or him with his career prior to the draft.
Yeah. And maybe you get to play the Bruce Gradkowski card with D'Angelo Williams. Let's have the discussion after the draft. If we don't draft a guy, we'd love to have you. If we draft a guy, maybe it's a little more dicey and he can then make the decision whether he wants to pursue it. I don't know how much demand there will be for a 33-year-old back out there who's missed, almost half the season with injury. I think that obviously hurts his market value.
Right, and Father Time's starting to wear on him here with these injuries the last couple of years. So, yeah, his market value probably going to be right at right at what he earned this year. Look, he got off to a great start again at the start of the season. Let's not forget that. But is he a guy that could start 16 games for you and touch the ball 20-something times a game? No. In fact, he really hasn't been that guy for most of his career. Remember, he shared time quite a bit, all of the time that he was there in Carolina as well, too. Never really been known as a true, true bell cow type back. So you have to keep that in the back of your mind when talking about his market value. Here's the thing. Even if you re-sign D'Angelo Williams, it doesn't prevent you from drafting a running back. So because as much as Fitzgerald Toussaint grows on you, but.
Yeah, I like Fitz.
But, he's not a dynamic player. He's replaceable. For sure, and God knows what's going to happen with Carlos Williams, who's on the suspended list, right now. Anyway, so I think you can draft one regardless of what happens, with.
I think they're going to draft one, regardless. I think that is their highest priority on offense.
Because you'll see, I think I've already seen a few mock drafts suggesting the Steelers taking an offensive lineman. Good God. This team's fine right now as far as offensive linemen.
Everybody forget the kid Hawkins sitting on the IR.
And I know people are concerned, and I guess it's a good time to kind of start transitioning into the wide receiver talk. People saying, well, they should probably take another wide receiver again, just in case. Sammy this, Sammy that, and Martavis. Sure, there's a lot of question marks about Martavis Martavis Bryant, whether or not he's going to make it back and stay clean and be able to contribute. And sure, there's a lot of questions about Sammy Coates right now as far as one-trick pony, who, by the way, it came out yesterday, I believe, that Sammy Coates is his hamstrings improving, his fingers not so much right now. Probably going to need surgery on them fingers after the season. So don't count on Sammy Coates doing doing much more than playing special teams during the playoffs, if he dresses at all.
So that, you know, that was really the interesting stuff I think we talked about yesterday, because you think about coming to St. Vincent next year, and look, you said it right about Martavis. First, he has to be reinstated by the commissioner's office. So that's point number one. And assuming that happens, then the Steelers have to invite him back. And it is absolutely not a guarantee that the Steelers invite him back. He handled himself as poorly as you can. And when you hear Ben publicly speak about how he was, you know, lied to his face, things like that, that's losing trust from the organization from the top. And I think management feels the same way.
I think it's guaranteed. If he gets, you know, reinstated by the commissioner, I think it's guaranteed he's back, you know, next season.
Invited to camp. Okay. So let's dream on the upside here. You come to camp next year. You've got Antonio Brown as your one. Martavis is your two. You know, however you want to order these guys after that, you've got Sammy Coates. You've got DHB, who's going to be back, who's, you know, he's under contract. And special teams value is unbelievable. You know, it was maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise. The silver lining of Martavis being suspended was the Steelers went right out and signed DHB to a three-year deal, which I think surprised all of us that it was not a one-year deal, but we learned why afterward. And so you got DHB, that's four. You've got all of a sudden, you got Eli Rogers, who's going to be your starter. He's going to start on Sunday, and he's going to be your starter next year in the slot. That's five. And then you got two guys who, Dave, I'm sure, unless you were a pretty diehard Steeler fan or did this for a living like we do, you had no idea who Kobe Hamilton was on August 1st. And you knew DeMarcus Ayers because he was a draft pick, but we never thought of him as a receiver. And as you joked, they sent Danny Smith out to talk to the media when they drafted him. They weren't thinking, you know, he's a return guy. He's not a receiver. And all of a sudden, what these two guys have done over the last 5 weeks is really impressive. That's seven guys just going to camp for maybe six spots.
And I think I joked with you yesterday, be careful at this point in the podcast. You better make sure you mention Kanan Severin, the guy that they put on IR, undrafted free agent that they signed last year, and currently Marcus Tucker, who's currently on the practice squad. If he remains there the remainder of the season, he's going to get a futures deal. All those guys are under contract. Sans, Kobe Hamilton, who's going to be an exclusive rights free agent, and he has to take a one-year deal for the minimum tender as an exclusive rights free agent, so you might as well guarantee that he's going to be back in camp next year as well too. You're right about DeMarcus Ayers. I mean, I look, and I did joke. I mean, you said Danny Smith out to talk about this guy and not Richard Mann after you drafted him. Now Ayers had some nice tape at Houston, but you know, there's a reason why he went as late as he did, and you know, obviously all Danny Smith really would talk about being his pay grade is that he was the number one guy on our return list, and then now all of a sudden here he is two games underneath his belt, contributing and drawing pass. He's drawn two pass interference. I think I joked about this too. He's drawn two pass interference calls in the last two games. He needs to teach Sammy Coates maybe even Darius Heyward-Bey how to fight for those footballs, and maybe they feel sorry for it because he's vertically challenged in that area there. So a lot of optimism. We're not even talking about missing Marcus Wheaton, who's been gone most of the season, and he's good as gone anyway because you know, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, going to sign elsewhere.
Yeah, and so, you know, the fascinating thing now, just looking forward to Sunday, is this conversation, whereas I think we agree that DeMarcus Ayers has surpassed Sammy Coates on the depth chart as a wide receiver. And if you're going to dress five wide receivers, you got your AB's dressing, Kobe's dressing, Eli's dressing, DHB's dressing because of his special teams value. And I know the initial reaction for a lot of people is, well, yeah, of course you got to dress DeMarcus Ayers. But here's the thing. And again, I asked Mike about this in the press conference today because we discussed it at length yesterday. The thing is, DeMarcus Ayers is probably not going to get on the field. And DeMarcus Ayers, whether you like him as a return guy or not, he's not going to be the return guy. He's not going to return punts. He's third at best on that list behind A.B. and Eli Rogers. And he's never returned kicks. And Mike said today he's never returned kicks. But we said, well, you know, Kobe hasn't either. But Mike didn't even give him the chance in the Cleveland game to return kicks, which makes no sense to me because their kick return game has been so bad. I don't know why he wouldn't give him the opportunity, but he didn't. And so because he's not going to get on the field, I'm inclined to say Sammy is, if healthy, the big caveat, if healthy, Sammy is the guy you dress because, A, he can go down with DHB on as a gunner on kick coverage. He has been surprisingly good in that role. Obviously, Shamarco Thomas is no longer around or available. And B, like it or not, of the guys who are the Steelers' options, he's by far their best kick returner. I mean, he's better than Kobe. He's better than Fitz Toussaint. And so when I asked Mike about it, he said, we'll look at some different guys in the role. But I think if Sammy's healthy, he will be the guy who dresses. And it would not – at that point, I don't think you probably dress six receivers. And I think DeMarcus Ayers may be get the short stick.
Well, yeah, when you think about Ayers, if he's not returning anything, he's not going to give you anything on special teams. However, I think we kind of in the lost episode of 2017 talked about.
We're going to have to have a special. We're going to have to have a special name for that podcast. So email us with whatever you want because it was the greatest podcast in the history of the Terrible Podcast, and it's in the ether.
Yeah, and be careful when you use the bad word attached to my name when naming that that lost episode. I think we kind of brought this up earlier in that lost episode, David, talking about going through the inactives and how there's maybe an outside shot that you could dress all six of these guys. Because
yeah, so let's go through them. Let's go through them.
Mettenberger, Mahalik.
Yep, those are your two guarantees.
That sounds something you take after losing a podcast. I'm a Mettenberger Mahalik. Go ahead.
Okay, so then we decided either Ricardo Matthews or Johnny Maxey, right?
Right, one defensive lineman.
Either Chickalo or Jarvis Jones, depending on health.
That's four.
Okay, I had thought Gilbert for sure because I thought maybe injury, but I'm going to say Gilbert anyway, healthy or not, he's going to be inactive.
How about Gilbert or Golden, or you think both of them are down?
I think Golden's definitely down with injury, and I think Gilbert would be down as well.
Okay. That
gets us to six.
That gets you to six. Well, then Xavier Grimble, if green dresses, is your other one.
Right, yeah, and that's where we were debating. So maybe that spot is between Grimble, Coates, and Ayers. So here's another one for you, as we ask our listeners, if you could dress two of Grimble, Coates, and Ayers, which two do you dress?
Well, I'll just throw in my two cents.
You would sit Grimble. I would sit Ayers.
Yeah, Grimble gives you nothing. I like being able to maybe throw. I guess you could go into it living in your fear, saying, "Well, what if something happens to Ladarius Green during a game?" But I mean, either Ladarius Green is healthy or he's not. I don't think you dress yet another tight end worrying about Green. Grimble doesn't give you anything as a special teams player. Ayers, you know, I think you could do maybe have him on the field for three or four plays, on offense, find a way to work him in if you needed to. And then, oh, yeah, if something was to happen, you know, to a guy like Rodgers or you need someone on the I would, if given the opportunity of all those three names, I would dress Coates and Ayers. And as you said, Coates can give you something on special teams and – yeah, whereas Grimble does it. But we'll throw that out to the listeners, The Terrible Podcast. Boy, you listeners, I hope you have your pen and pencil because you got a lot of stuff to reply to at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and so when I asked Mike, I said, look, you know, what are you doing about the return game? Then I also asked him a question about Ayers and said, can he play all three receiver positions? Mike didn't give him a ringing endorsement of yes, but it was interesting. I think of 71 offensive plays, he played them. He played 65. He was out there. Dave, when you think of, I think because of his size, we kind of feel like he's a slot receiver. But do you think of him as a slot receiver only, or do you feel like he's a guy who can play on the outside, and is he more capable of that than Eli Rogers?
Oh, wow. That's a good question, because we – you know, we knew what Eli Rogers, or, you know, breakdown prior to them signing him and after they signed him, we knew Eli Rogers was a great route runner working out a slot during his time at Louisville. And, you know, there were a few of us that were excited after signing him before he was lost for his rookie season to that foot injury that he suffered. Had a lot of, you know, hope for him. Ayers, man, I'm trying to remember all the film that I saw on him, David, and I'm kind of drawing a blank of what I remember seeing him, because I didn't spend a lot of time on him, because I thought it was more of an afterthought.
He's a return guy.
More than anything on him. I was a bit surprised to see him outside, and I think he got a little separation against a guy like who was it, Tavon Young, in that game against the Ravens. But is he a guy, though, that you're gonna keep, using, you know, in a Martavis Bryant kind of role, I guess, is what you're asking? No, I view him more as a slot receiver. And look, I haven't gone through a fine tooth comb with him as far as his play against the Browns as well, too. Remember, like I said earlier in the show, he was targeted 12 times and only caught 5 passes. That was the lowest catch percentage, other than I think maybe DHB in that game. He had a drop. Ayers had a drop in that game. Ayers possibly had 2 missed assignments in that game as well, 2 against the Browns. He obviously didn't haul in that catch along the sidelines. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, be excited about DeMarcus Ayers, but let's not put him into, we got to get him 30 snaps.
12 targets. Yeah. No, I was, I hadn't seen that. We didn't talk about that yesterday. I didn't realize he was targeted 12 times and, you know, drew a pass interference penalty.
Right, 13 times in total if you count that pass interference call. Now, obviously, was it one of those, maybe even two? One of them was a throw to the end zone that Landry just threw away. Wasn't that one of them that to the right corner of the end zone that Ayers didn't even have a shot?
Yeah, there were a couple. You know, it was interesting that they were throwing that pass to him. I was, and that's why I asked you about him being an outside guy, because, you know, Ben got him on the week before on the go route where he drew the pass interference penalty, and they're throwing, you know, Landry's throwing that, you know, it's not a wheel route. I don't know, he's throwing that to the deep corner of the end zone a little bit like the pass that he threw to Colby Hamilton the other side. I just, they feel like he can play the outside, which is, you know, it's interesting. And like, you know, we talk about the Steelers offense, you know, one of these days, if they ever live up to their expectations, and maybe that day is Sunday, maybe it's, we don't have to look to 2017. Maybe it all happens on Sunday, but man, it feels like they could be dynamite. So, hey, podcast listeners, let's get to our buddy Craig. Hey, you know, mortgage rates are near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or just refinance, you know, you can contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com, or just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
We'll be talking about these receivers more, obviously, throughout the offseason as well. So I guess we should turn our attention to that poor tackling defense.
Yeah, the run defense. And I asked Mike about the run defense. All he said was poor tackling. You think it was more than that, right?
Yeah, I think there were some missed assignments for sure in that game. LT Walton on the ground a few times as well. Shazier, even though Shazier called out some of his teammates apparently after the game, saying some of them took the meaningless game a little bit too far. Shazier missed a lot of tackles in that game as well, too. That was a bit concerning. However, remember who all was in there for most of the game. You had Johnny Max, who we hope doesn't have to dress against the Dolphins. You had LT Walton, who, you know, even though he's shown an improvement some this season, is more of a 8 to 10 snap a game guy. You had McCullers in there that had to play a lot more with Javon Hargrave leaving the game with a concussion and returning very, very briefly after clearing protocol there. So there were some gap assignment issues. However, I did think McCullers, that might have been McCullers' best game of his career. Some nice run.
How about 31 snaps? Had to be the most snaps he's ever played.
McCullers had a few nice runs, 5 total tackles in the game, a few nice run stops on the interception by Ryan Shazier. He was in the face of Robert Griffin, the third. And how big was that sack that McCullers had, beating that rookie center? Someone on Twitter said, "Man, I know you're not a big fan of McCullers, but I appreciate you giving him his due after, you know, by that post that I wrote last night." I did kind of fire back to him. Well, it did work in his favor. He was facing a rookie center making his first career start. So I don't want to compliment Daniel McCullers there, because look, I mean, this is an NFL team. This is the kind of things that you kind of hope Daniel McCullers would show. He did that sack though. How big was that sack in that game? Because it dropped him back 8 yards, and then Cody Parker proceeds to miss a 49-yard field goal on top of that. The defense overall, yes, tackling was poor, even in the secondary. I think some poor angles. And speaking of the secondary, Artie Burns, not his best game.
Artie got caught looking in the backfield again, and he likes jumping those, and we've seen him now get burned a couple times. You pointed out Dez got him in that Buffalo game. He tried to jump one, and he didn't get it, and who was it who went down the sideline, and then the two guys, then Davis and Gay ran into each other for a long touchdown. I can't remember who the receiver was.
Clay, wasn't it?
Charles? Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, Clay, who has beaten the Steelers up in the past, and he got smoked there. It was late in the last minute of the game, and I'm sure he thought, you know, the Browns were going to try and get in field goal range. And you want to talk playing to the whistle, Mike Mitchell got over there and knocked them out of bounds. And if you're a Browns fan, Dave, and you have the ball on the 2-yard line, you've been running the ball really well, and you throw that screen out to whoever was running kind of a wheel route. Terrell Pryor doesn't block his guy, and then Shazier throws you for a 13-yard loss from the two. And the next play, Timmons comes clean up the middle. Big Dan's after you. You got to throw it away, and you settle for a field goal. That was impressive. I mean, the defense wasn't great. And as you said, after they got their first 14, it looked like they might not get any more. But they did make some big plays when they had to. And we haven't mentioned Jarvis Jones yet.
Yeah, exactly. Jarvis Jones. Mike Tomlin asked about him. What was it after the game? Said something to the effect that I don't think confidence is an issue with Jarvis Jones. He's not making enough plays for him or me. Jarvis made a few in that game for sure. Got his first sack of the season. That was nice to see. Obviously forced a fumble deep in
the huge play.
Steelers' own end. That was a huge, huge play, and batted down a pass at the line of scrimmage as well too. I can't remember if that was a first down or a third down play as well. You know, back to Artie Burns again too. Remember that earlier in the season in a game against the Dolphins, it was him that kind of missed one of those switch release, right? That led to a big play, I think, in that game as well too, against the Dolphins. I believe Artie had some angle issues, some crack and replace issues in that game against the Dolphins. Now granted, Artie Burns has made a ton of progress since then, but you just don't want to see him get beat. Look, Burns almost had a pick six in that game against the Browns as well too. But you just, the biggest thing you want to do, I think, in this game, in this playoff game against the Dolphins, is just don't give up those explosive plays.
And as you say, he almost had the pick six, and then he sat on it again. And you know, that's good play recognition by the Browns, and they picked on him late in that game. They went after him on his side and had some success. Yeah, it was not his best game.
Right, right. And, we could go through this meaningless game and pick out a lot of things that the Steelers defense did wrong. And tackling is something that I don't think this is the last time that we're going to be talking about tackling Steelers defense this year. Just hopefully it doesn't cost them any games moving forward. And I think it's
better than USC's tackling last night.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Here's something else to consider when thinking about this upcoming game against the Dolphins. Shawn Davis did not play in that game against the Dolphins earlier in the season. Ryan Shazier did not play in that game against the Dolphins earlier this season. That was the first game that I believe the Steelers didn't have Cameron Hayward. Good Lord. Artie Burns, even though Artie Burns played a lot, I think he played like 40-something snaps in that game as well, too. Bud Dupree obviously wasn't back. James Harrison wasn't the starter, you know, wasn't the every down guy outside. Trying to go through William Gay was your starting outside corner, and Artie Burns came off the bench and played 49 snaps. Javon Hargrave only played 48 snaps in that game. James Harrison played 39. Jones played 31. Chickalo played 30. Ricardo Matthews played 30. Tyler Matakavich played 18 snaps in that game. LT Walton played 11. Jordan Dangerfield played 9. Danny McCullers played 8. LJ Fort played 1. Justin Gilbert played 3. How's that for a quick recap? In other words, I guess, and Robert Golden played every snap in that game defensively. So this isn't the same Steelers defense that lined up against the Dolphins and gave up 200-something yards to Jay Ajayi. And Mike Tomlin had the great quote for that today, didn't he?
Yeah, I like that. We didn't treat it like a lightning strike.
Right. Let's just hope lightning doesn't strike again. And Mike Tomlin properly addressed the Dolphins offensive line as well, too. This is an offensive line that no longer has Mike Pouncey. Remember the name Craig Urbick, the former Steelers, what was he, a third or fourth round draft pick?
Fourth round pick out of Wisconsin, right?
Out of Wisconsin.
Third.
Wasn't that the same year they drafted Mike Wallace? I'm trying to remember. He's now the starting center for the Miami Dolphins. If that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what else will right now. Now, obviously, the rest of their offensive line, I think, has played pretty decent. I guess we'll know in a day or two whether or not Ryan Tannehill will play. And even if Ryan, I would kind of hope Ryan Tannehill does play, because some of the things that Ryan Tannehill does do good involve him moving out of the pocket a la kind of RG3 this past week. And you would think with that knee issue that Tannehill's dealing with, that's not something you're going to probably want him doing a lot of. You want Ryan Tannehill to work out of the pocket. But regardless, I think you'll see Matt Moore this week. I think Jarvis Landry is obviously a threat, threat with them. So two total. Have we talked about how the Dolphins aren't going to have their two starting safeties? Obviously lost Rashad Jones during the game against the Steelers earlier in the season. Have since lost their other starting safety. This is a little bit, these are two totally different teams than we saw back in Week 6.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have Armando Seguro tomorrow, a beat writer covering the Dolphins, to get into it. So wrapping up Cleveland, Dave, I really hope the Steelers don't fall behind by double digits in the game against the Dolphins, because the annoying stuff that I got on my – can you believe in that game the amount of stuff that I got of the Steelers don't care, they're unprepared – they're not trying. Fire Mike Tomlin.
Undisciplined, unmotivated.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. They now have what they won 3 games from 10-point deficits against 3 straight division opponents. Give it a rest. Watch the whole game. And the whole thing about guys not trying.
But it was the Browns, David.
Right, it's the Browns. Right, they're terrible. They shouldn't even be in the NFL. Alabama would beat them. The one that we got to yesterday. I do want to make this point. Is I'm so tired of the narrative of they're not trying, they don't care. If you want to say that, and it's fine, because there may be instances where it is true. I'm not going to make a blanket statement and say it's never happened. But tell me specifically who isn't trying. If you're going to say something, give me the name of the guy who you think is not trying or giving full effort. Because I pretty much can promise you that rarely, rarely happens, and it didn't happen on Sunday.
I'm looking over these snap counts. I agree with you. And looking over these snap counts from the Dolphins game. Remember, Marcus Gilbert missed that game too, David, against the Dolphins. Chris Hubbard had to play in that game again and start. So
I think that sounds like a good article that you need to write about all the guys who didn't play.
Yeah, I think I think I might just do that well.
Because I didn't realize it until you reminded me that. Talk about who's in for whom at this point and the snap counts, because that is interesting.
Third down, Kobe Hamilton played 12 snaps in that game. I'm trying to scan Sammy Coates. What did he play in that game? Not many. Was he even active? Sammy Coates played 17 snaps in that game. Darius Heyward-Bey had to play 23. Eli Rogers, wasn't that Eli Rogers' first game back from the
was he even back? That sounds like he's back early there.
He played 32 snaps. Was that his first game back from the foot or whatever toe injury that he suffered against the Eagles in there? So, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the Steelers in this rematch against the Dolphins absolutely for sure.
All right. Hey, podcast listeners, remember we've been talking about mortgage rates and our buddy Craig Oxane, and mortgage rates at all-time lows. You know, the mortgage process can sometimes be as challenging as spelling Roethlisberger.
Or finding a lost recording of a podcast.
Right. The lost podcast. We're looking for names. Let our buddy Craig guide you through the sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Miami. And if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that will help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online, www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Anything else from Tom and Presser, Dave, or we can get to a couple other things in that tomorrow when we talk to Armando?
Yeah, we'll be back at it again on Wednesday. And for those that missed it too, I did not stutter at all during the podcast on Monday. That's now gone.
And I didn't cough or sneeze. It's in the ether, but I went a whole podcast without coughing.
I can attest to that. David, was this the second best podcast of 2017?
This was the second best episode 62 that we have at season 7, episode 62 we've ever done. Second best podcast of 2017. We have set the bar relatively low for tomorrow's effort.
All right. Thanks for following along with us. And I apologize once again for that. You can complain to me at Steelers Depot on Twitter. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We expect that email box to fill up after some of these Landry Jones talks and the other ideas.
Who are you dressing Sunday?
Yeah. Who are you dressing? What to name the lost episode of the podcast? All that.
Bring
good.
It back, D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah. Good. Any sympathy donations for us, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper navigational bar as well. And I sure hope this podcast didn't go anywhere, David.
Well, don't tell me if it does. Just post something that's just blank recording. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.